This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على سيدنا وحبيبنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. So what the workbooks have is the text twice. So it's written twice. The first time it has literal translation under it. So every sentence right under it is the translation in English. And then the text again is, if you take a look at it, go like to the middle of the booklet that you have, you'll find that the text is written only in Arabic and there is enough space under it for you to write notes. You see how it works? Yeah, so that's the text again. So the text is pretty short. Did you get one, brother? No, it has English. Take it because it has the... Yeah, it's translated. So the first... you have to take that one. So the first... the beginning of it has the literal translation in it, and then the second half is the text again with no translation but enough space for you to write notes under it. So I just made it like that so that you can read the translation if you struggled with understanding what I said, and then you have a space to actually go and write down notes if you want to write some notes, inshallah. And there's a lot of stationery in there when it comes to pens and pencils and stuff. Whatever you need to use, feel free to use, inshallah, no problem. So what is the text called? What is it? So it's called, I'll write it down here. So this doesn't work. First casualty, yes?
Is there any more left?
Are there any left or are they all used up? All right.
Want to show us on the fly in Arabic?
Yeah, so you can just look at what anyone's using and then I'll make more. I'm gonna make at least 10 or 15 more, inshallah, for next week. So it is called Al-Muqaddimah Al-Ajurrumiyah. It's always a good sign when you can't even read the name, right? It's always a good sign if you can't even read the name of the text. So it's a very, the name is a bit weird, let's say, if nothing else. Why? Because it was written by a man called Ibn Ajurrum. Right, and so if you paid attention yesterday, the man who wrote al-Fiqh al-Shafi'i Matin Abu Shuja', his name is Ahmed ibn Hussein al-Asfahani. Right, so he's from Asfahan, which is a part of Iran and or Pakistan today. So he's not Arab in his origins, and Ibn Ajurrum is not Arab in his origins either. Remember, we talked about that a couple of times, and I told you that most scholars who have written, you know, texts that still exist today weren't Arabs in their origins. They're actually, and this man who's writing the most famous text on Arabic linguistics, grammar when it comes to vocabulary and stuff like that, the most famous text is Al-Muqaddim Al-Ajurrumiyah, and it is written by a man who is not in his origins even Arabic, right? So his name is Ibn Ajurrum. That's why we read it Al-Muqaddim Al-Ajurrumiyah. Oh, I didn't even put the wow. Look at me. Sorry about that. So there's a wow here. Even better if the teacher can't even write the name right, so that makes it even better. So Al-Ajurrumiyah, all right, so that's what it's called, just in case one day you want to quote it. Now, it's a very, very famous text in Arabic grammar, to the point where it's always the number one text to go to if you're learning Nahw and Sarf, if you're learning how to work out the Arabic grammar and the rulings and guidelines of putting sentences together. So it's always the first text to go to, and then after that they do something called Qatr al-Nada and Bal al-Sada, and then after that they do something called Al-Fiyat ibn Malik, the thousand verses of poetry written by Ibn Malik that summarize all the Arabic language, and then the very famous explanation on that is called Sharh ibn Aqil, the explanation of Ibn Aqil, and that is the highest you can go to. So if you study that, then you know everything there is to know, you know, from a moderate point of view about Arabic grammar. You will only go beyond that if you're going to become a specialist and within the field. Now, so what we will do is we're going to read the text. The text, you can read it with me in the beginning of the booklet that you have, so you can understand the wordings. And then if I put any notes or comments, you can go to the part where there's a comment, this place for comment, and you can fill that in, inshallah. I'm going to take some...
What are we studying today?
So we're starting Al-Muqaddim Al-Ajurrumiyah, which is a text in Arabic grammar. right? So it's the basic text of within Arabic grammar, and usually it's the building brick. It's the first building block when it comes to actually learning how to put sentences together, understand how the language works. Now, I will add to it a lot, meaning I will do a lot of commentary on this text, meaning I'll actually kind of sidetrack a bit and go into things that I know are beneficial for those who are learning Arabic as a second language. Because for me, I've taught this text many times before to Arabic speaking people, but not to non-Arabic speaking. Meaning I've taught this to those who Arabic is their first language, not their second. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge for me to teach it to those who Arabic is a second language. So I'm going to have to add a lot of commentary and explanation. Yes?
What are these lines?
So this is for note-taking. That is made that way so that you can take notes. So the point of it is that if I'm explaining, giving commentary, you immediately can go there and write down anything that you want to write down. So that's why I added it to the booklet, inshallah. And I'll make more copies if anyone didn't get a copy. Yes?
Oh.
You need?
The extra copy.
Yeah, so I'll make copies for next. If you didn't get a copy today, just let me know that you didn't get a copy and I'll make one for you, inshallah. By next time, you'll have it.
Are you supposed to have an English and Arabic version or Arabic?
So the ones that I made have English and Arabic in them. So that one that you have English and Arabic. It's that part's English. Go to the middle of the thing. Go there. You go. That's the beginning of the Arabic, right? So it's kind of cut in half. I've divided it in half. Now, so we're gonna read inshallah the text. At the end of each session, I will take sources like three-letter words, and then I'll derive, do some derivatives from them, and teach you how to derive from a three-letter base, how to derive different words from it. So once you get the hand of that, and the hang of it, then you'll understand exactly how you're going to do it, inshallah, in the future. Because it's an important part of understanding how the Arabic language works. It's a very, very logical language. It's mathematical. Once you understand how things work, that's pretty much how it works for 90% of all the different situations that you're going to be faced with, inshallah. So we begin. قال الأجرومي رحمه الله تعالى. He says, الكلام هو اللفظ المركب المفيد بالوضع. I don't have the translation, so someone has to read the translation for me. So what is the translation that is used? Or someone maybe be, yeah.
Speech is the composed saying or utterance which is beneficial in its placement or composition.
All right. So الكلام means speech. What is said? This is the definition of scholars of grammar, not philosophers. Right. So these are the scholars of grammar. For them, speech is lafz. Lafz is translated as utterance or what's that?
Saying,
right? So saying or utterance, al-murakkab, that is composed or that is put together with more than one word or has more than one element or component that is making it. Al-mufid, that is beneficial, bilwada, by the way that it's composed. So the point of this definition that you need to think about is al-mufid. It has to be beneficial. For scholars of grammar, it has to be something that is beneficial. It has to give a meaning. So if I say Abdul Rahman, the smart, the intelligent, the good-looking, the tall, and then I stop, right? And I said like 15 words. For scholars of grammar, for nahwiyin, that's not kalam, that's not speech, because there was no benefit in what I just said. I just described. I didn't give a full sentence. A full sentence would be Abdul Rahman, that is coming today. Or is here for the lesson. So there's a khabar, there's actually a piece of information that was added. Just describing something without giving a full sentence for the scholars of Nahu is not seen as speech. It has to be properly, the sentence has to give a full understanding of what it's talking about. So in Arabic, يعني, it's interesting because you can say a sentence that has maybe 50 words in it, all descriptive. As-sama, the sky, as-safiyatu, as-zarqa'u, the high sky, the blue high sky. You can say like 50 different words of description. All of that is not seen as speech. On the other hand, you could say and that's a sentence. This is speech. All right, because it's a command. Wa'a. Right, so this is to begin the struggle and the agony of understanding Arabic. Wa'a means understood, comprehended, is aware of. Wa'a, right? So if you want to command someone to understand something, you will say, "Ai." So "Ai" means be aware, understand. I'll give you another example. Waqa. You know taqwa? Taqwa comes from the same origin of waqa. Waqa is to protect oneself. Taqwa, that's where the concept of taqwa comes from a linguistic point of view. So waqa means for you to protect yourself. So if I want to tell you protect yourself in Arabic, then I will tell you qi. If you guys know Surah Al-Tahrim, ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, qu anfusakum, right? Qu anfusakum. Qu is a command to protect yourselves, but it's a group command. It's not a singular command. It's for more than one. It's a plural command. Does that make sense? So in Arabic, is different than English in the terms that when you're talking to when you're using singular or for two people or plural, then the word will look differently. So qu is for a group, and qi is for one person. So I look at Brother Bassam, I say qi, right? And that is speech for scholars of grammar. However, if I, like the sentence I used for Abdul Rahman, that's not speech to them because I didn't say anything. It's not a complete sentence. Someone get me a tissue so I can. There should be a tissue somewhere here. All right. So that is the first couple of words in the matin. We move on, inshallah, to the word after that. Again, it's just you just give me the definition of what speech is, and that's how Islamic scholars would work. They always start by defining to the best of their ability, and then they move on to the first. So aqsamul kalam, the different divisions of speech. قال الأجرومي رحمه الله وأقسامه ثلاثة. And there's three components of speech. You're going to use three things for you to speak in Arabic. اسم وفعل وحرف جاء لمعنى. So in order for you to speak in Arabic, or for you to verbally articulate something that makes sense, you're going to use three components. You're going to use ism, you're going to use fi'l, and you're going to use something called harf. So ism is a noun, fi'l is a verb, and then harf is a preposition. Can you spell that for me? P-R-E? P-R-E-P-O? So it's P-R-E-P-O, right? So preposition. All right. So a preposition. Now, harfun ja'a li ma'na. What ja'a li ma'na means a preposition that it came to help explain a meaning. What is the actual translation, the word for word?
Conveys meaning.
So it's something that gives a meaning. So a harf, the preposition, doesn't in its own, if you use it, doesn't give something clear. There has to be attached to something else in order for it to actually give a meaning. But it makes it easier for you to convey a meaning when you have a preposition. Now, even in English, we have a similar structure. So like in the English language, in the French language, in every language, is a similar structure. The human race, all their languages, have similar structures. Meaning this is how we communicate, right? Anyone saw the movie Arrival? You should watch Arrival. It's a very interesting movie because it talks about, of course, you know, it's a science fiction, but an alien species come to the planet and they want to communicate with them, but they don't use stuff like this. They communicate differently. And of course, the whole concept is, do they communicate at all? And if they do communicate, do they use languages? And then the whole movie is based on, you know, that idea. And it's just very interesting. If you're not doing anything one night, watch Arrival. It'll blow your mind. Anyways, so we continue, inshallah. What is the difference between noun, verb, and harf? So what a noun does, it represents a meaning unconnected to time. That makes sense? It represents a meaning that is not connected to time. Human, fish, person, thing. These are concepts that are not connected to time. On the other hand, when you say verb, a verb will convey a meaning, but it is connected to a time. So it's either ماضي, مضارع, or أمر. So it's either in the past, or in the present. I'm going to help me with the English. And then أمر is going to be a futuristic idea because you're giving command. So this is seen to be futuristic because you're saying, do that. Of course, he's not going to do it. You know, he's going to do it in at least a second later or a few minutes later. All right. So how the Imam of Al-Ajurrumi goes through this text is he's going to study each one, first of all, individually, and then take certain concepts regarding these three components and go in a bit more detail. But this is what you need to know. is that a noun or an usm is a word that has a meaning that is not connected to time. There's no, you don't connect it to time. Verb is a word that has a meaning that is connected to time, meaning it's going to take you, it's going to give a time concept to it. And then harf is a preposition. It has no meaning unless it is connected to one of these two. It has to be regarding or attached to one of either a verb or a noun for it to actually have a meaning in its own. It does not have a meaning on its own. Yes?
What did he say about the noun again?
It's a word that has a meaning unconnected or unrelated to time, not related to any timing. It's a timeless concept, right? The sun, right? That doesn't have, there's no time there. Unless I use a verb, I say the sun is shining, huh? So it's shining, when is it shining? Now, right? As far as what I just said, because verbs are going to be connected to time always. All right. So that, again, you know, if you find this very simple, that's good, but that's just the beginning of it. That's how you start studying yani text. It's always simple at the beginning. Yeah, just little or simple definitions. All right. Now, the word after that, or the chapter after that, فَالْإِسْمُ يُعْرَفُ. Now, الْإِسْمُ يُعْرَفُ, الْإِسْمُ, the noun, يُعْرَفُ, is going to be identified by. We're going to identify it by, and then he's going to give us a number of tools to identify what a noun is. And how do we know that this is a noun? If you're looking at, reading Quran, you're reading an Arabic book, how do you know this word is a noun, or if it's a verb or something else? Then the way you know it's going to be a noun is by a number of tools or of markers. The first one is bil-khafd. So al-ism, or the noun. So we've established that al-ism, or al-ism, is a noun, right? Is the concept of the noun. For the markers for it, yu'araf bil-khafd. Bil-khafd or bil-jar. So the word bil-khafd also means, yani al-jar. So let's say that we look, I'll give you an example of what khafd is. Let's do something more simple. So bismillahi, right? So this kasra is one of the markers of khafd. And only a noun can take a kasra at the end of it. But not a kasra, can only be given khafd. That's not accurate because some verbs will have kasra, but they won't be subjected to khafd. So, yes?
Would running in the Arabic language be a verb?
Yes, so running, rakada, or jara, right?
How would that have to do with time?
Well, when did he run?
That's not like in every sense. You could ask like, how did he run? Like, he ran fast and ran. Other descriptions not the
same. Okay, so no. So let me
explain. In the past, though.
Yeah, so so I'll give you an example. An example of a noun. Rakd. Aw jaryun. Running as a noun. Right? It's not attached to time. Rakdun or jaryun. Running, just a concept. Now, rakada, this is a verb, and it's saying that it's in the past. Yarkudu is in the present. And then urkud means that it's going to be a command. Are you saying the idea? So what I'm going to try and teach you is how to identify which one is it. Is it a noun? Is it a past tense verb? Is it a present tense verb? Is it a command? What is it? So I'm going to help you try to learn to identify what it is by basically giving you some markers to know about. So one of the markers of al-usm. Is khafd or jar, meaning for it to be subjected to the concept of having a kasra for a normal word and having other markers that are equivalent to a kasra in other tenses. So, like, I'm gonna give an ayah that has like everything that inshallah I need. So لَقَدْ خَلَقَنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيم. Right. So the example of خفض is here. أحسن. Take a kasra, it's مخفوض, right? Or مجرور. مجرور is what the scholars of Basra would use, and then خفض is what the scholars of Kufa would use. Because if you were to look in historically, Arabic linguistics went through a lot of evolution. And during the early Khilafah years, there were two big schools of Arabic grammar and linguistics. There was a school in Basra and a school in Kufa. And there are other schools in Sham and in Hijaz and other places as well. But those two schools were the most notorious and famous, and their teaching still exists today when it comes to grammar. And they both exist in Iraq today. Both Kufa and Basra are cities that exist in Iraq. And the Kufiyin use the term khafd for this, and then the Basriyin use the term jar for this. But both of them are the same idea. Meaning, you cannot add the concept of khafd to a verb. Just keep it at that for now, and then we'll revisit this in a bit more detail as we go along. So the first thing that you know a noun by is that it, the marker of khafd and is attached to it. It can be subjected to the concept of khafd. What tanween? The second marker is a tanween. What is a tanween? It's an extra noon that comes at the end of a word. Right? And it's not written as a noon, but it's written as a double haraka, or a double movement. So it's either, well, this is the line, either two dhamma, two fatha, or two kasra. Right? So if a word has tanween, then you will immediately say this is a noun. It cannot be a verb because it has tanween. So taqweemin. Right? So taqweem. So this is definitely a noun. So if you're not sure what it is, this is a noun. It's not going to be anything else because it has tanween on it. Now, when I talked about this, I didn't say it was definite, because sometimes a fi'l, a verb can have this, but it won't be something original in it, and it won't be khafd. Like, meaning the concept of khafd won't be there. It'll be a different, it'll have a kasra, but for a different reason. It won't be because of khafd. That's why just leave this first one for until later on, and I'll explain it inshallah in more detail as we move forward. Like, it'll make sense inshallah as we go along. Now, وَدُخُولِ الْأَلِفِ وَاللَّامِ, and the entrance of الْأَلِفِ وَاللَّامِ. So دخول, the entrance of الألف واللام on it. So the example in the ayah that I gave is الإنسان. Right? You see ألف لام at the beginning, it's a noun. There's no فعل that has ألف لام at the beginning of it. Alright, so ألف لام cannot enter at the beginning of a verb. It doesn't work like that. If the ألف لام enters on anything, like الإنسان, الشمس, القمر, right? Like all these different words that you can, that if it has an alif lam at the beginning of it, يعني والشمس وضحاها والقمر إذا تلاها والنهار إذا جلاها والليل إذا يغشاها والسماء والأرض ونفس, نفس has a tanween, different. But all those six ones all have alif lam at the beginning. All of them are nouns. إذا الشمس كورت إذا النجوم انكدرت إذا الجبال سيرت إذا العشار عطلت إذا الوحوش. So alif, الوحوش, الجبال, النجوم. You see alif lam, it's a noun. Now why is it, well, how is a noun different than a verb? Nouns are words that give meanings without time attached to them, right? Nouns are more conceptual, they're more fundamental. Meaning, if I give you a sentence that only has nouns in it, then I'm giving you a rule, giving you a law. If I put a verb in it, this is how the Arabic language works, then I am subjecting this rule to time. I'm giving it a circumstance, because it happened or it's happening, or right? Because it's not. I didn't disconnect it from time by using just nouns. I put verbs in to add time to it. So now you have to think in a more open manner. You have to say, oh. That's why the big rules of Islam, like لا إكراه في الدين, there is no coercion in religion, all came in nouns, just nouns, and there's no verbs. Why? Because it's not something that is based on time. It's just a concept that you need to continuously understand. And all, yeah.
So, if it, no word has tanween, then it's not a noun.
word begins ud, it's a noun automatically, right? If a word begins ud,
yeah,
it's a noun.
Immediately, automatically. So for these two, it's automatic. You see al at the beginning, you see tanween at the end, any type of tanween, it's a noun. Al-khafd as a concept, if you understand khafd, but it's hard for me to explain it to you right now. I will explain it to you later on as we build sentences. But this concept only enters now, only affects nouns. But a good marker is the kasra. 99% of kasrat you will see it'll be a noun. Like, there are certain exceptions, but 99% of the time. So these are the markers of nouns. All right. Now he continues, rahimahullah. He says wa huruf al-khafd. Wahi, meaning the entrance of huruf al-khafd. The fourth one is the entrance of huruf al-khafd. The letters that cause khafd. What is the word khafd being translated in the text as? Do you have...
It just says khafd,
right? So, because it's a concept. There's no word that can actually translate it. I might have to explain it, inshallah, as a concept as we go forward, inshallah. But there are a bunch of propositions that are called the propositions of khafd. Right, and he gives the example of a number of them. So we're going to read them. Give me them one by one, inshallah. Can I take this off? If you're taking notes, can I take this off or not yet? All right, so I'll take this off. So an example of harf khafd would be fi. This is an example of a proposition of khafd right here, fi. So if you see a harf khafd right here. Harf jar, right? Exactly the same thing. So if you say harf jar or harf khafd, the same thing. If it's easier to say jar, I'll say harf jar. If you're more used to that, then harf jar. So if you see it, then what you know is the word that is after is going to be a noun. That makes sense? Immediately. It doesn't come before a fi'l. So if you're saying a sentence and then you have a harf jar, then you put immediately after it a verb, then that sentence is not proper. You should fix that up, because verbs are not preceded immediately by propositions or any jar propositions specifically, but rather only nouns are. Yeah, that'll be ism majrur after that. It'll be a noun that is subjected to jar or subjected to khafd. So let's we're gonna go through the different huruf al khafd. So give me verse one.
Min.
Then.
Ida.
So these are the basic ones. Now there are more huruf jar, but these are the ones we're going to start with. There's going to be a detailed explanation of these ones at the end of the text. So once we're done almost coming to the end of the text, I will go into these in a bit more detail. But for now, I will explain a few ideas regarding what they are. So min, if you translate it in English, to English, it'll be from? What did he give us?
Just said min.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's almost... impossible to translate them properly into English, because there's no perfect equivalent to any of them. But I'm going to give the closest thing that I can. Min, you can use from for, probably. Ila, towards or to. An, now an is so dependent on what the word before it and after it is, that it's almost impossible for me to put a label to it. I can say that it's close to from or away from, taking from something to something else. Ala, on, not always but close. Fi, within or inside or in. Rubba is a whole different ball game when it comes to what rubba means. Is there a translation for it? I don't think so. Do they put a translation for it? No. So rubba, like rubba akhin lam taridhu ummuk, that there are many, many times there'll be this, or many times there'll be that, or observe that sometimes this happens. So rubba is more of a concept than it is a harf. But nonetheless, it only comes before a noun. It never. Why are we studying these? Because these are markers. If you see them, then immediately what is going to be after them? A noun, a usum. Well, listen, immediately. So you see one of these, it's going to be an ism. Yes?
Is rubba a root for rubbana?
Yeah, it's Rubbama is just Rubba with a ma at the end of it. And ma is something we'll study that is called Zaida. I mean, you can add it to a lot of words basically uselessly, or just offer an extra edge to the meaning. So that's what, yeah.
It's for emphasis?
To some extent. To some extent you could use it for emphasis, but that would be a restriction to the usage of it. Yani. Al-ba is like, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّي, right? So, رَبْ, so now the word is ism, and the ba at the beginning of it is a proposition, or a preposition, sorry. Al-kaf, what examples do we have for a kaf? فَمَثَلُهُ كَمَثَلِ صَفْوَانٍ كَمَثَلِ. So the word ka, كَمَثَلِ. So this is, now kaf, what is the ba, what does it mean when it comes? It has over 18 meanings. I will discuss at least four of them at the end of the at the end of the text, because it'll just, by then it'll be easier. Kaf is for drawing analogies, or for as a simile. So it's like something, likeness, or yeah, likelihood. So I am like him, ana kamithlihi, right? So kaf is to compare, or to say this is something is like something else, is similar to something else, similarity. Yeah, so similarity. You have to be patient on me when it comes to the translation sometimes. But similar, to draw similarities. So if you want to say this is like this, this is similar to this, you use the kaf. Khalidun ka Mu'adh, I mean they're similar to each other and whatever, with their funny haircuts. So Khalid ka Mu'adh, in that sense it works out, right? So. But again, don't forget why we're studying these. These are just markers. It's the fourth marker of how to know a noun. You know a noun by the concept of jar entering it. We'll study that inshallah very, very soon. We know it if a tanween is at the end of it. We know it if there's an alif lam at the beginning of it. And we know it if it is preceded by a harf jar. We know it if one of these things exists before it. Lam is... what's a good example for lam? See, I used to have examples for this. All right, the known ayah in Surah Al-Baqarah, Lillahi, right? ما في السماوات وما في الأرض. So Lillahi. So this lam here makes the ha, of course. So Lillahi. What is lam for? Lam is for yes.
Two or four. Like you're doing something like for the sake of Allah.
Yeah. So four, and it has the meaning of ownership in it. To say someone's something. So it gives ownership. That specifically, that one is different. Yani, you chose the worst one to bring up. That is so different. Again, prepositions have a lot of meanings. I'm just giving you the most famous, but there's a lot of meanings, especially the lam. The lam is very, very fluid. But this is what it's usually going for. So, هذا القلم لي عبد الرحمن. لي means it's his. So li, if I said هذا القلم عبد الرحمن, it's me saying this pen is عبد الرحمن, which makes no sense. You add the lam to عبد الرحمن, now it makes sense. It's his pen. هذا القلم عبد الرحمن. So these prepositions are extremely important. If you're speaking the language and they don't exist for you, then people who are listening to you talk are going to be cracking up and saying you make zero sense of what you're saying. But generally speaking, so that is, these are the four markers that exist within that the Imam rahimahullah put, as in what, how do we identify a noun? This is how we're going to identify a noun. We're going to identify it by one of the four things: either the concept of khafd entering it, and that is something, if it's not clear right now, I will clarify it inshallah as we go along. Being preceded by one of the haruf of jar, one of the haruf that causes jar, any word that is preceded by this is going to be a noun. If it has tanween at the end of it. Or if it has alif and lam at the beginning of it. Now, are there other markers? There are other markers, but I don't need to go into all the markers. I just need to know a couple of the ones, especially the ones that the Imam here explained in his text. So these are just ways for you to identify what a noun is going to look like. And if I use words in Arabic that you're not clear of, ask. Make sure that you take as much vocabulary as you can from this as well. All right. Now the alamatul fi'l, so the markers of the verb. How do we identify a verb? Right. قال الأجرومي رحمه الله والفعل يعرف, and the verb الفعل يعرف is identified by, right? قد والسين وسوف وتاء التأنيث الساكنة. So this is how we're going to find out what a fi'l is, or we're going to identify al-fi'l.
I think we skipped one.
Did I skip something? Where did I skip? Where? Oh my gosh, yes. Yes, so there's more, I'm sorry about that. So there's actually more حروف جر that are attached. So after we're doing the lam and the kaf, there's actually a couple of more that come. So حروف الجر and حروف القسم are the same thing. It's just a sub-division of حروف الجر. So the subdivision of حروف الجر is called حروف القسم, meaning the prepositions that are used for oaths, for taking an oath. Like what? What are the ones? Waw, right? الواو والباء والتاء. So, waw. Wallahi. And they all exist, yani, one way or another in the Quran. Of course, the waw, very, very known. Tallah, he exists around four times in the Quran. You must have read it at one point or another. And billahi, yani, or in other forms, there's different oaths taken by that. So if a waw and then a kasra at the end, then you know this is going to be. But the question that you're going to ask is, well, how do I know that this waw is the waw of an oath? I have to understand the meaning, right? So that's why this makes it a bit less beneficial for you. But generally speaking, if you're taking an oath, you don't take an oath by a verb, right? So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when you take an oath, you don't swear by a verb. You swear by a noun. So washams, he's taking an oath. Washamsi, that waw is the waw of taking an oath. It comes before a noun. But you can't say it doesn't work. Wa yalabu, and then you meant I swear by you playing. That doesn't work. That's not how it happens. It never. So the letters that are for that are specific for taking oaths will always precede a noun. And the example of them is waw and ba and ta. Wallahi, billahi, tallahi. These are those that are used. All right. Again, a lot of this we will circle around and talk about more later. But this is just the basics. So al-fi'l, how we're going to identify al-fi'l. والفعل يعرفون is identified by being preceded by قد, being preceded by seen, سوف, and then having تاء التأنيث الساكنة. All right. So whenever you see the word قد, right? Immediately after it is going to be a verb. Examples? Come on. Yeah, give.
قد يعلم.
قد يعلم, right? قد أفلح من زكاها, right? قد كانت لكم في رسول الله, very good. قد كانت, right? So whenever the word قد after it, there's going to be a verb. Now, قد specifically comes before either past tense verbs or present tense verbs. It doesn't come before a command, a verb that is in the command tense. No, it only come before either past or present. When it comes before past, it means definitely. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّهَا. Definitely, he who purifies himself will be successful in this world and the after. So قَدْ أَفْلَحَ, if it comes before a verb of past tense, قَدْ كَانَتْ لَكُمْ, so this means definitely. If it comes before a present tense verb, like قَدْ يَعْلَمُ, then one of two things. Either it's to say often, means often, or rarely. So it'll mean either often or rarely, depending on the context of what's being explained. Right? So قَدْ يَعْلَمُ اللَّهُ الْمُعَوِّقِينَ مِنْكُمْ. That means Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala often knows. Of course, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not often know, He always knows. But that's in the Quran. So whenever you see in the Quran, the قَدْ coming before, so قَدْ when it's related to a verb that is talking about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala always means definitely. But in the Arabic language, generally speaking, outside of the Quran, then قَد, if it's before a past tense verb, then it's going to mean definitely. And if it's before a present tense verb, it's going to be either mean often or rarely, depending on the context of what's being said, meaning you'll kind of see قَد يُدْرِكُ, right? قَد يُدْرِكُ الْمُتَأَنِّي بَعْضَ حَاجَتِهِ وَقَدْ يَكُونُ مَعَ الْمُسْتَعْجِلِ الزَّلَلُ. قد يدرك المتأني, the person who does things slowly and takes time, يدرك من he will achieve بعض حاجته, some, a certain level of what he wants to achieve. So that means he rarely does, قد or often does. Someone who takes his time, does he achieve what he wants to achieve more often or rarely? More often, صح? Like someone who takes his time, meaning he thinks things through properly and he gives it enough preparation, will achieve what he wants to achieve more often than someone who. وَقَدْ يَكُونُ مَعَ الْمُسْتَعْجِلِ الزَّلَلُ. And with someone who's in a hurry, there'll be a lot of mistakes. There'll be mistakes. So is he talking about that will often happen or rarely happen? No, often someone who is in a hurry will make mistakes. So قَدْ sometimes will mean often, and sometimes it will mean that what's happening after it is happening rarely. Understanding is, regardless of all that, if you see qad, then what's after it, what after it is a verb, is a fi'l immediately. That's all you need to know. Seen. Now, again, if you don't know the word, you're going to say, well, every word that begins with seen is going to be a verb. No, this is the scene of the future. So let's say I tell Mu'adh to memorize the surah. Memorize Surah An-Nahl, ya Mu'adh. So Mu'adh either gets up and starts doing it, or he'll tell me سَأَحْفَظُهَا. أَحْفَظُ is to memorize, right? So أَحْفَظُ is to memorize. هَا meaning it's a preposition going to the Quran. أَحْفَظُهَا or surah, to the surah. So if he's actually memorizing, if I tell him Mu'adh, memorize the surah, and then he's actually أَحْفَظُهَا, I am, what do you want from me? You know, I'm doing it. But if he's not and he wants to do it later, then he'll tell me سَأَحْفَظُهَا, which is basically procrastination, right? So if you're a master procrastinator, then seen is going to be a good friend of yours, inshallah. You'll make good friends with seen, and then you'll make friends with its bigger brother, sofa. Sofa is just a fancier way of doing it. Sofa means that you'll do it a bit down the road. So sa'ahfaduha means that Mu'adh is saying, I'm going to do it right now, just give me a second. Sawfa means I'll do it, inshallah, during my 5-year plan, inshallah, I'll get it done. Like I have a long term. So seen and sofa are the procrastinating prepositions used to say that you're never going to do anything, but you're just going to get rid of me for now, or basically for the future, right? So if you see the seen or sofa, then you know that immediately what after it is going to be a verb. Why? Because seen and sofa, they mean something in the future. They have within their own meaning a time, a tense. And like I told you, verbs carry tenses, whether past, present, or future, but nouns don't. So when you see seen and sofa, it's bringing in a tense, so that means what's after is going to be definitely a verb. Am I making sense to you so far? Dirasatun Nahu, studying Arabic grammar, is difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. You need to be very, very patient with me, inshallah, in order for you to learn this. But inshallah, you'll find benefit in it. Eventually, you'll be able to speak, hopefully, and read and understand what's being said properly. Now, the last one is ta'nith as-sakina, like the to say. So kana, something was, right? You can say kanat. Right? So this is called ta ta'neeth. So ta is the letter. Ta'neeth is the feminine ta. As-sakina, the silent or the unmoved with a haraka, with a tashkeel. Feminine ta. What is the translation of it on the... There's no translation either? Okay. Good for him, mashallah. He doesn't do no effort at all coming up with the regardless. So ta'at-ta'neeth as-sakina is a ta that is a feminine ta, because in Arabic, nouns are nouns. There's no way for you just have to know if this noun is a feminine or masculine noun. There are some markers we'll discuss, inshallah. But generally speaking, they are what they are. When it comes to a verb is always going to be attached. A verb is way more social. So imagine verbs to be a social thing. It's connected to time. It's connected to individuals or to people who are, someone who, into gender. So it's way more social. As far as nouns are just they're not, they're autistic. They just sit there. They do nothing. They don't talk to anyone or anything. They're not a part of anyone or anything. And they don't care about time. They don't care about anything. They just sit there. So, which gives them a more fundamental usage, and they become more principled than verbs. But a verb, kana, is talking about someone or something that is masculine, and kainat is talking about something that is feminine. And then you can do the same thing for any other verb. So, ja'a, someone who came, then ja'at. La'iba, someone who played. La'ibat. And these are the ta'nith as-sakina, they're silent, meaning they have a sukoon on them, at least. Yes?
And this ta is only at the end of the word, never
yes.
At the beginning.
Yes, always at the end of the word.
Yeah, you can never have the first letter with the sukoon on it.
So never. Yeah. So, seen and sawf and qad come at the beginning, come before the word. So qad comes as its own thing before it precedes it, and then seen itself is attached to it at the beginning, and need a second is attached to it at the end. I should have said those things. Good, thanks for asking, for clarifying that. Does that make sense? Are you understanding? So qad comes before the word, you know, then immediately after it is a verb. Seen itself are attached to it at the beginning, you know it's a verb, and then need a second, it comes at the end of it, is attached to it at the end, then you know it's a verb as well. So that's how you know verbs. Yes.
So qad is like a whole separate word.
Yeah, it's a whole separate word. It's a harf for the most part, and then before it, yeah.
The last thing, what's it
called? Ta'ut ta'nith as-sakina.
At the end of the word.
Yeah, it's at the end of the word, and it's the silent feminine ta that comes to, that attached to verbs when the verb is being used to talk about a female or something that is feminine. All right, fair enough. I think that's. That's good. Okay, let's move on to the last. So the marker of a preposition, the markers of a preposition. So alamatu al harf. So alamatu al harfi wal harfu ma la yasluhu ma'ahu dalil al ismi wa la dalil al fi'li. And the harf is the words that you cannot use the marker of the markers of the. Of the nouns with it, nor the markers of the of the verb with it. Meaning, neither markers work, right? So it doesn't. None of the above apply to the preposition. So the preposition cannot have tanween on it, right? It can't have tanween at the end of it, because if it has tanween at the end of it, then it's a noun, right? It cannot have alif lam at the end of it, at the beginning of it. Sorry, right? Because if any word has alif lam at the beginning of it, then it's a noun, right? It can't have ta'at-ta'nith as-sakina at the end of it. Because if it has ta'at-ta'nith as-sakina at the end of it, then it's a verb. If it has qad before it, then it's a verb as well. If seen and sawf are attached to it, then it's a verb. Right? It can't have khafd in it, or it can't be preceded by a harf of jar, because then it's a verb, it's a noun. So any word that none of the above apply to is what a preposition is. And that's how he defined it. And it's defined by Imam al-Hariri, وَالْحَرْفُ مَا لَيْسَتْ لَهُ عَلَامَةً فَقِسْ عَلَى قَوْلِي تَكُنْ عَلَّامَةً. And the harf is something that does not have a piece of evidence, or doesn't have a marker for it. There's nothing to mark it. It just doesn't, nothing of all the other markers apply to it. And if you understand that, then you'll understand how prepositions work, because they don't work any other way. So I'll give you an example. Min is an example of a harf. And then you say, well, isn't harf a letter? The word harf can be used for different things. It's used for the letters, the actual alphabetical letters, the letters of the alphabet. It's also used for this. And harf means the edge of something, right? So these are on the edge because they don't really have any clear definition of what they are. They're just there to help us understand different meanings. So min, you cannot say minun or minin. If it's done like that, then this is no longer a letter, it's a word, if such a word exists, but there's no word to exist. You can't say al-min, right? You can't enter that to it. You can't put qadmin, unless you are saying admin, but you're just being funny, then it doesn't make any sense, right? So qadmin, that doesn't work either. You cannot put semin, it's a whole different word now. Right? Oh, sawfamin. No. Or mint, or minute. Nope, none of that works, because it's a letter. Letters do not accept it. Letters do not accept any of the markers that are connected to the noun or the verb. And that's the only way that we know it. Yes?
Is that mint supposed to be a word, or?
No, so what is it?
That's supposed to be
be a word or a letter.
Which one? Well, what do you think? Based on what we've talked about. I'm telling you that none of the markers that I put apply to it. So it's a letter. It's a harf, or preposition. It's not a letter, it's a preposition. Again, don't translate harf to letter here. It's a preposition. So prepositions don't accept any of the markers of the nouns or the markers of the verbs. They don't work. So nothing applies to it. But it is in itself a marker, right? It helps us know what a noun is. So if you see min, then what is going to be after min immediately? A noun, right? An ism. So a noun is going to be after it immediately. So if you see min, then immediately after it is going to be a noun. That's 100%. Because it's a harf min haruf al-jar. But so it is a marker in itself, but it does not have anything for us to know. It doesn't have a marker. The only marker it has is that it's not, nothing applies to it. I mean, none of the markers that we saw for verbs or nouns will work for it. لا دليل الاسم ولا دليل الفعل يسبقه يعرف به. Yeah, so the preposition in itself is a marker for a noun. But how do we know preposition? Just none of the other markers work for it. Regarding the markers for both asma and afal. All right, very good. When does Maghrib end?
1 minute.
Okay, so let's do some, I'm going to do a deriving at the end of each. So let's take a word. So, ba. I'm not going to do Hamza first because Hamza is complicated. We'll leave Hamza at the end. So I'm going to start with the ba. Ba, seen, ba. So if you open a dictionary, you'll find like this. Ba, seen, ta. And then you'll find like a page or two of all the different words that are derived from that. That's how Arabic dictionaries work. English dictionaries don't work like that. They work very differently. So in Arabic, no. You'll find ba, seen, ta. And then every single word, right, that can be derived from these three letters in this sequence. So not ba, ta, seen, but ba, seen, ta. You'll find them in one place, right? Studied on different levels. We'll just wait, inshallah, for the other. And then before, for the 3 minutes, I'll just give you examples of how to derive things from it. I'll write them down and explain what I mean. So the example of bast, right? So bast is to spread something. The concept of spreading something is what bast is the core meaning of bast. Something being spread. So the infinite term is bastun. It's a noun, and that's what it looks like, right? Now, verb is basata in the past. We have an example of that in the Quran. لَإِن بَسَطْتَ إِلَيَّ يَدَكَ لِتَقْتُلَنِي. Right? So basata. If you're going to spread your hands in killing me. So it's a figure of speech, but I mean, if you're going to actually open your... So sometimes the concept of spreading is going to be literal, and sometimes it's going to be figurative in the way that the word's going to be used. And that's the beauty of using Arabic words, that sometimes the meaning is going to be literal, and sometimes it's going to be figurative. So you say, why is that word being used here? Because the meaning here is figurative, and then it makes a lot of sense. يَبْسُطُ وَاللَّهُ يَقْبِضُ وَيَبْسُطُ. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala withholds and then spreads his khayr. يَبْسُطُ. Spreads, and here he's talking about his provision, subhanahu wa ta'ala, right? And it's in the present tense. Ubsut. Ubsut is to spread, because you're actually commanding someone to spread your sheet or to give your wealth, meaning. Basit is subject, so if you do it, that means you're a basit. That's why one of the names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Al-Qabidul Basit, right? The one who does something. It looks like that basit when he does it. Mabsut. That's how it looks when you're the thing that's being spread, right? So بَلْ يَدَاهُ مَبْسُوطَتَانَ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's hands are open or spreading or spread, and meaning is figurative, meaning that his provision is spread everywhere. Everyone gets it, right? مَبْسُوط.
Same meaning
as مَبْسُوط. Yeah, مَبْسُوط is, why is it the same meaning? Because you're spreading your face, your mouth. You're smiling. The same word. So we use the mabsut in Arabic slang as you're happy. Why? Because you're spreading your smile, right? So this same concept of spread is still there. And basit is the adjective sifa, something that is also spread, or just in nature has that that concept of being something widespread, right? So this is how you derive. I mean, every time I'm going to do it, I'm going to take one or two letters. I'll time myself better next time, inshallah. And I'll take a few words and I'll teach you how to derive different concepts from it. And then you'll find that, it makes sense. I gave you guys an example of ilm, right? Next time I gave you guys an example of knowledge and how you can derive from three letters at least 16 different words that will connect to the concept of seeking knowledge, teaching, using it, becoming knowledgeable, or using the tools of knowledge. So this is an example of how that would work, inshallah. Okay, good. Well, actually, this is, we're on time. JazakAllah khair.